Today's show is brought to you by The Star City Murders. Heath, your movie is out. People should pre-order it.
They should. Yes, The Star City Murders, a movie I star in and produced, is out for pre-order on Amazon and Apple TV. It's coming out April 16th, which is coming soon, baby. And you can also get the DVD or Blu-ray through Amazon as well. And it's also on like Walmart, Barnes and Noble. You can get it anywhere. DVDs and Blu-rays are sold, but go to Amazon. It's easier. But yeah, no, it's coming out the 16th. We're excited. It's been a long journey. And we also have the companion podcast, the Star City Murders podcast, which goes from script to distribution, the inside scoop on how the film was made, which is a lot of fun. And we just released that pod to the public. So that's available wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, baby. So enjoy the show. Check the show notes. Follow all the links. Pre-order by The Star City Murders today.
Welcome, everyone, to Daily DVR Does Sugar. Hey, new Apple Plus series from creator Mark Protosevich, starring Colin Farrell. We'll be covering all 8 episodes of the series, diving into this film noir-esque mind-bending mystery. The mouthful there. My name is Heath Sentazzo, a.k.a. Heath Solo. And before I welcome in my private investigator co-host, this podcast is a part of the DVR Podcasting Network. You can find out more about us at dvrpodcast.com. And if you're new to us, just listening to Sugar and be like, oh, these guys are new. We cover a great collection of shows over the last several years. Recently, we covered Murder at the End of the World, the FX on Hulu show with Britt Martling, True Detective Night Country. And this summer, we'll be covering season 3 of Mayor of Kingstown and season 2 of House of the Dragon. We also did a special pod on Three Body Problem, the Benioff and Weiss show from Netflix. So we do a lot of pods. So go to dvrpodcast.com. And if you want to support independent podcasting, you can become a patron. Go to patreon.com/DVR. And for a couple bucks a month, you can get pods early, ad free, and exclusive pods, including the film list, a personal podcast I do counting down my 1,000 favorite films of all time. We're in the 900 still. We've done about 4 or 5 pods. And our good friend Ando co-hosts that with me as well. So we're excited to get into a little Sugar. So, all right, enough of this. Here we go. I want to welcome in my co-host for this ride. We've done many a pods together. And this is a new show we're covering. The man, the myth, Mr. DVR Podcasting Network, Mr. Axel Foley. Hello, Axel.
Solo, what an amazing intro. I feel so ready in your warm and capable host hands. I'm ready to talk about Sugar. And hey, every time we start a new show, we always say, whew, I am glad this show is good, because we dedicated ourselves to podcasting this show before we see it. We never really asked for screeners. And let me tell you something, so most of the time that critics get screeners, they have to watch them on like their laptop, or they don't have special effects, or the sound is all. I want to see it how you see it, how everyone listens. So we watch it on the service as it comes. And even in the past, remember, we've got screeners and we end up watching it on TV anyway.
Mayor of Kingstown, because we covered Mayor of Kingstown the first 2 seasons. We got screeners for that. But I was like, I kind of want to wait till it's on my big TV.
Me too. Yeah. But this was great. I'm very happy. I'm excited to talk about it.
I am. And just a little background on the show. The premise, pretty much, a private investigator, John Sugar, played by Colin Farrell, examines the mysterious disappearance of Olivia Siegel, the granddaughter of a legendary Hollywood producer. Like I said at the intro, was created by Mark Protosevich. I believe this is his first gig as a showrunner. He wrote The Cell, Old Boy, I Am Legend, Poseidon.
Yeah.
Executive producers, Adam Arkin, veteran. As a lot of people know who he is, Sam Catlin, Audrey Chone, Colin Farrell, Scott Bennett Greenberg. And we got a crazy cast, as we'll get into the cast as we move forward. But we got some interesting people, some people I've met, some older actors I love. So I'm very excited. This cast is a really A-plus cast. And today we'll be covering episode one and two. Episode one, Olivia, was directed by Fernando Mireles, who directed The Constant Gardener, City of God, City of Men, Blindness.
Oh, man. He is. When I saw this solo, this is another thing that sold me on this show. It has a really great pedigree, people behind the camera. And he knocked it out, these episodes. What great direction. So inventive and interesting. I loved it. I love City of Men and City of God. Those were foundational films for me coming up. They were amazing. I know. Do you remember seeing those Brazilian films that he actually got the people in the, what are they called again? Flavela, if I pronounce that correctly, the neighborhood to like work on the movie, like, and come and write it together. And then there was a school that came out of it. And a couple of the kids that were in the early movies ended up directing films themselves. It's just he is a really cool guy, as well as just an extremely artistic and creative director. And I thought the look and feel of both of these episodes, there was no letdown after the first episode. You know, back in the day, the pilot would look great solo, right? Because the director's really trying to lay the groundwork. And then the second episode would not look as great. But this is seamless, man. It was just, and it's good to cover them together because they really, I mean, I feel like they're all going to flow, but this was just beautiful.
Right. And I like this too, because he directed both episodes, Olivia and These People, These Places, and Protosevich wrote both, of course. But like you said, sometimes, like, perfect example, great series, but I almost said Tokyo Drift. Tokyo Vice, Michael Mann, like, directed the pilot. Lost. J.J. Abrams directed the pilot, but then they pass it off. We're seeing a lot in, I'm going to say, these limited series, or like these 8-episode to 12-episode series. You're seeing a lot of directors either direct the whole series or direct blocks. Which I like, because it keeps the continuity. And like you said, I mean, and I like the fact too, Axel, that it's not like, I mean, I love Steven Spielberg, but these are like, I love finding a show where, oh wow, I love four of his movies, but it's not a huge, huge name, say in Hollywood. I mean, in Hollywood, a big name, but you know what I mean? Like if you say Michael Mann or Steven Soderbergh, most 90% of the people know who that is. So I like the fact that I'm not going to say fresh blood, but it seems in television it is fresh blood.
Yeah.
I almost said flesh blood. What podcast are we doing?
Well, I totally agree with you. I love that too. Fernando recently did The Two Popes, which was pretty popular and very interesting and artistic. Yeah, it's just, you're right. When it's great to see it. Of course, we know one of the reasons why television is flooded with great directors and big, huge actors like fucking Colin Farrell, right? Who is, you don't get any more A-list than Colin Farrell, right? Like, he's on that list. And because you look at films today, and really TV has taken over. It's hard to get a film made if it as you well know, Star City, baby, unless you have a fucking guy in tights and a cape, or it's a sequel or an IP that people, you know, Barbie or some shit. You have to be inventive in the way, and I'm not knocking that, they were very inventive, but that you see people come to television and you get something like this, that's just Amy Ryan star studded all the way down. It's just of the highest quality.
Yeah, and I mean, and we've talked about this. I mean, we just finished covering True Detective Night Country with a Jodie Foster as the lead. We get a lot of these, whether they're going to be limited or only a couple of seasons. You're getting the big names, and you're getting the short run, but the quality is absolutely amazing, and that's the way television has changed, especially now with everyone, not just Netflix. Now, over the last 5-6 years or whatever it is, how Apple TV and Paramount Plus, they're all tapping into these shorter series, kind of like our friends the Brits do. They usually, you know, can do 3 90-minute or 6 episodes, sometimes 8, but it gives you basically what a movie can't, which is time. You can't have an 8-hour movie. No one will go see it. But if you break it up into 8 parts, people will watch it. So it's just, you know, so it's a lot of fun. And I didn't even really know about this series until you're like, Solo, Sugar, watch the trailer.
Yeah,
I'm like, what?
Me neither.
Yep. I'm like, Colin Farrell, PI, I'm in. Throw in a convertible. Shit, I'm really in.
Yes.
So yeah. So I was super excited for this. And we've done a few shows in the past early on, flash forward, that we were kind of knee deep, Alcatraz. We were knee deep into, and then it didn't turn out the way we wanted, but we've done pretty good with like Mayor of Kingstown, you know, Mindhunter. We did kind of after the fact a little bit. We covered Mindhunter, but I just was like in Rabbit Hole recently at Paramount Plus, the Kiefer Sutherland show that we covered. A lot of fun. It was great kind of going in unknown, and same here. You know, I don't know how many podcasts are going to be about Sugar, maybe one off some people's regular feeds, but I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm excited too to cover the show. And Colin Farrell, I just got to say straight up, I always liked Colin Farrell since Tigerland, Minority Report, you know, way back in the day, and followed his career. But I feel like over the last, 5 to 7 years or maybe less, he's really stepped up his game as an actor. He was always a great actor, but I mean, playing the Penguin and the Lobster, True Detective season 2, you know, this role. It's nice because my wife was like, she likes Colin Farrell, but she had just watched season 2 of True Detective. So that character's a little, but she was so like, I love him now because of his charisma. He's playing that leading man. He has all the tools, and a lot of times he'll play roles that are quirky or a little offbeat, but it's nice to see him in, well, a traditional role. The character of John Sugar has many flaws, but he's just so cool and his presence is there. And I just really enjoyed watching him throughout these 2 episodes.
Oh, definitely, man. He adds, like we're talking about with the background people making this in the foreground there with fronting a TV show with Colin Farrell. And that's why I watched the preview. I don't think I even watched the whole trailer when I texted you. It was like, we got to do this show, man, because it's LA. It's got those noir detective feel to it. It looked really interesting, and I'm so happy to report that it really was. And he grounds the show immediately when we open in black and white in Japan. We hear that voice and then we see him and it's like, oh shit, it's Colin Farrell. He just has that superstar quality, which that's something that I really think is interesting, that the show is playing, it's playing into that type with him, right?
Right.
I think that we'll talk about what theories we may have of who fucking John Sugar really is. And some of my wife had are kind of crazy and out there. I'll have to mention them. But with all the flashbacks, cutting to old movies, just using stock footage when he's driving or making it look like that, it really plays into his looks, his presence. He just really looks good in a suit, man. I mean, that's why he was in fucking Miami Vice. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, dude.
The fucking good-looking Irishman, you know? So that's another good thing I like.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, kind of like before, as we start this pod and get into the plot and the different characters and what's going on, I kind of want to keep talking about the character of John Sugar, just to kind of establish. I mean, he's in practically every scene, if not every scene. And he's this private investigator, kind of for the elite. He gets paid very well in Tokyo. He was working for one of the big bosses of the Yakuza. Yeah, and it's funny because I told my wife when I, because I had watched the first episode and then I rewatched it with her last night, and I said, okay, don't worry, it's only a few minutes, because we watched Tokyo Vice Japanese subtitles, Shogun Japanese subtitles. I said, I know this is an American show, but it's going to be Japanese subtitles at the beginning of this episode. Don't be afraid. It is in English. But just so he's detailed. He's very calculated. Cares about people. He can fight. He doesn't like to hurt people, like he says, but he has to at times. Yeah. And of course, the really big thing that I think sets apart this character from any other PI, he has what I call the movie mind. And why I say this, because I can relate to this with myself, but really like my wife. We grew up on film, going to the theater, and a lot of times, like, I remember when I was in senior in high school, I watched A Time to Kill, and I was so like, I was like, oh, Matthew McConaughey, Jake Brigance. I remember I went back to college, and the first night I went out, I had tan pants and a white button down because I felt like Jake Brigance. Like, you just way someone drinks at the bar. So my wife, one time we were at, I think we were at this bar, restaurant called Firefly, pretty famous restaurant here in LA. And it was Valentine's. First time I ever had 1942, Don Julio 1942. It was just a very nice night. And she, but it's before we got married. And she goes, my gosh, she goes, you know, I'm so happy in our relationship. I go, in my movie mind, I never thought I could get a relationship like this, stuff you see in movies. But she like confessed to me like how our relationship was going. It was just how she envisioned it with her movie mind. And that's one of the connections we had, was we see a lot of movies and we project it upon the world. Like, I'm dressing like Matthew McConaughey, or, you know, she wants a relationship like, I don't know, Gone with the Wind, you know, whatever. It's just like different things of life like that. So when this hit, where he is totally relating to how in the Westerns they order rye at a bar, or, you know, how it's amazing that this character has that. And a lot of us probably do, because we consume so much media. We grew up on it, that it affects our daily lives, how we do things. And we may not even realize it, but Colin Farrell, John Sugar, does realize it. And he sees everything as he's in a movie.
Yep.
So it's just very interesting to me.
Definitely. I love it. And the way they incorporate it into the editing, there's an article that I did not want. Maybe I'll read more of this stuff after the show's over, because, you know, I don't like to get too into reading interviews and articles while the show, because they tend to spoil the show.
Right.
And people who are creative parts of it, you can't blame them. They need to talk about it. But sometimes they shot the thing how long ago, it was whatever, you know, so sometimes they spoil by accident. So I don't, but there was a good interview with the editor and the director about why they chose to do that. I say good because it looked like that was all it was about. But I love that part of it. And I think, again, that plays into Colin Farrell being Colin Farrell. The look and feel of it, the setting, the music is amazing. I love the intro titles, the jazz, how it's a little bit blurry, the change of focus, the pinhole camera stuff, which reminded me, interestingly enough, of the Canadian filmmaker Guy Madden. I don't know if many people are fans of his. Very strange films he makes, but he uses a lot of pin. And we've seen it more recently in Yorgos Lanthimos. What's Pretty Things? That's the name of the movie, right?
The hotel movie. Audrey Tattoo.
No. The movie that just won Emma Stone Best Actress, right? Yeah, Pretty Things.
Oh, Pretty Things. Okay, yeah. Gotcha. I get confused. There's Big Little Lies, Very Bad Things, Little Pretty movie? Things.
I don't even remember.
Pretty Things, Small Things, All the Small Things. Oh, sorry.
Is that what it is? That's right. Poor things.
It's a pretty thing.
Poor things.
Poor things. I knew it wasn't pretty.
We were both
way off.
But we're also both stalling until we could think of it.
Well, I have the screener of it, and it was on my TV. I don't know where I put it. So I stood up and I'm like,
you got to check that one out, Solo. That's pretty crazy. I know. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, we learn more about him. Some of the stuff you have in the notes, I like. The car is amazing too. What is that? A Stingray? Is that a Corvette Stingray?
You know, that's the one thing I forgot to look up.
I think it is. I think it is. That's amazing. But it's also a two-seater, which I could never fit in. I'm too fucking big, man. There's no way my 6'4", 260 or 70 or however much I fucking weigh now would fit into a car like
that. Whoa.
I'd love to drive.
Axel Sugar going all into his
Axel needs to have less sugar. Living in the hotel is so LA, right? Like living in like the Chateau Marmont, right? The hotel, which we were trying to figure out before the show started, we're both going back and forth. The name of the hotel is Casa. Let's see here. Wait, I have it in the hotel. Kenny Sugar. Oh, what is it? Casa de la Corazon, which means the heart. That's what the hotel is. Heart. Yeah, because I'm trying to look for clues and things like that. Yeah, Casa de la Corazon, which means heart in Spanish. Corazon. So
yeah,
that's
I mean, because even his handler, Ruby, is like, you know, with the money you have, you could get a house, settle down. He's like, nah, man, I love the hotel. They clean it twice a day, concierge for whatever I need. Like, and it's just like, again, with this character, the neatness of him, the detail, everything has its own place. The way he gets, you know, take my bags to the room. Let's get you, you know. They're taking care of him. Oh, we'll have the chef cook something up for you. And it's just such a clean way of living that the elite live that way. You can't get good service at that at like a Holiday Inn or whatever, but people will act like they should demand that. At a couple hundred bucks a night. But I mean, I'm sure it's multi-thousand dollar a night bungalow. Wow.
It's a lot probably different hotel than Carl's hotel.
Well, there you go. Yes, poor it Carl. Is. Poor Carl. This character, he's born on September 2nd. He speaks a bunch of languages, Axel, Arabic, Spanish, yes, Japanese. And you have a little tidbit of what that is.
Yeah, so
there's a word.
He's a polyglot. And the invitation that he receives, I believe that was later in the first episode, to Societe Polyglot Cosmopolitaine. That's his and Ruby's mysterious secret club that he's talking about in the second episode. The next day, he's going to go to that club. And that's where he'll also see Dr. Lucas, who Ruby is pushing him to make an appointment with. But he's like, I'll see him tomorrow anyway, because that's all their club, which I guess is where all 19 or 20 of the detectives or agents that Ruby runs will meet together. So that's what this is that we're supposed to, I would guess, at the rate we're going, I would think that we'll see that next episode, maybe the episode after. But I think that would give us a big clue into what's going on. And that's the kind of, we have two real mysteries here. The murder mystery and the mystery of who the fuck this guy is and all the weird shit that's associated with him. And it seems Ruby who knows him best. So that language use, that knowing so many languages is a part of that. And I guess is a signal of maybe what all of these people have in common. But that's the great mystery, man. We'll have to go into some theories later on about what that mystery is. We'll see.
Yeah, because you know, because we get established who John Sugar is, and then, oh, okay, he comes back to LA from Tokyo, gets his mail, a lot of Cinematographer magazine and all this different, you know, he's got some letters, and, you know, he's taken the Siegel case on his own as he was directly contacted and not through Ruby. And so they have a little discussion of like, hey, this looks bad. It's disrespectful that they're contacting you. So you yeah. establish, okay, this is his handler. But I didn't realize that there was going to be an even bigger network. You know, if there's going to be multiple John Sugars out there. So that's interesting to me. And then I start thinking of spinoff series with different characters.
Well, it reminds me
of my movie mind.
Did you check out Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Amazon? With Donald Glover?
I have not yet.
You should. You and your wife should. You should watch that together. That's a great show. And it has some great set pieces as well. But Donald Glover mm-hmm. is always great. But they kind of work for a mysterious organization. And you're never quite sure who they're really working for or if what they're doing is good or bad. In this case, it seems like so far in both of these episodes... One thing from the trailer is that they showed him when he shoves the guy against the wall that he finds in the hotel after he finds Carl dead and the guy comes out of the bathroom. They show that part and then they show him kind of shaking and they interlay the voiceover of him saying, I don't like to hurt people. So it's like, is he some kind of monster or something like that? Like they kind of hint towards that in the trailer. You know, as far as that's going to go, I don't know, but it seems to me that Ruby and John are really good people, right? Like from watching these two episodes, it doesn't seem like he says that he has a past, right? At one point he says, if she finds out about my past or something like that, right? Like it's bad. But other than that, all of his actions, he's kind and polite to everyone that he comes into contact with. He helps out the guy, the Arabic guy. He speaks Arabic to him and then he gives him the number for Dr. Lucas, his doctor, right? To help his mm-hmm. daughter. He helps out Carl. He seems to acknowledge everyone that he even passes his keys to, or you know what I mean? When he comes to the hotel, like he knows about
even with
everyone.
Melanie.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't have sex with her. He doesn't steal from her.
You're drunk.
He puts her to bed, puts the TV on, you know, like, and I'm wondering, and especially in the Carl moment or even in the Arabic, you know, the taxi driver who's having an issue. I'm wondering if that's where John Sugar kind of came from, whether he lived on the streets or came from a poor family or struggled. And maybe he's now that he gives back. I don't know if it's just his good personality or he's trying to make up for a lot of bad things he did. Yeah, I mean, it could go either way. There's a connection there.
I agree.
Like he had that connection with Carl.
I agree with you. I felt some sort of theme of addiction and recovery definitely in this show, right? Like not only do we find out basically almost all of our characters, Olivia was an addict, Melanie was an addict, right? We find out that Carl, that he is talking about the street. And so it's like, and he can drink without getting drunk. So that's a weird dichotomy there, right? Like,
yeah, his metabolism moves like 50 times. I'm like, what?
Now, this is where we could get into it. We're just shooting the shit, right? This is where the weird theories come in. When that metabolism thing, my wife and I had the same thought. She said something different first. She said, is he an alien? Because we also have that strange box that looks like it's going to be a MacGuffin, you know what I mean? Like the Pulp Fiction box or suitcase or whatever. But he eventually opens it. It looks like it has a kind of crystalline top to it, like it's almost organic, right? But when he opens it, he takes out this rather futuristic looking syringe and shoots it into his neck. That's after he has all the hallucinations that his arm is still bleeding, right? Mm-hmm. So my wife was like, is he an alien? But then she also had the same thought I had, is he a vampire? Is this a vampire show? Like, is he?
Oh my.
Is he trying to do, like, he knows so many languages. He just falls asleep on the bed. He has such a calm presence.
Well, he falls asleep because he injected himself.
No, I mean, with the dog. That was a different time with the dog, right? Like, he's just sitting there with the dog. Well, maybe he did inject himself again, though. You're right. Maybe we just didn't see it. We can infer that. But I don't know. When I see like the metabolism thing, right? You can't get drunk. That's like a vampire thing. The kind of the shaking, something, he's holding something back, right? This kind of connotes like something's trying to come out of his body, right? There was an off, I don't know, like the fascination with blood maybe, or not wanting to hurt people, the looking at the moon as we do this podcast during an eclipse, right? Looking at the moon. I don't know. I'm just throwing shit out.
Yeah, the moon's interesting because at night it seems like the old moon from like the Wolfman movies.
Yeah.
Like it was black and white and then it is color, you know, more colorized during the day. I'm not going to go down this rabbit hole just yet.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not
buying it either, though. I still feel like there. I'm not
possible.
Yes, and you know what
it's
find?
It's very possible.
I think that this show, and we've watched a million shows, and we've watched a million sci-fi shows, so you can.
But he
see
does eat.
Coming.
Actually, he does eat eggs.
That's true.
So I don't think vampires can eat eggs.
I was looking for that too to see if he was actually eating during that scene. He did eat, and vampires don't eat. So, but there is definitely a secret coming. There is something we're going to learn about him. And they are doing a great job, in my opinion, of mixing the presentation, the direction, the editing, the music with this kind of mystery and our main plot, which is as interesting, our Chinatown-like, you know, story,
right,
with the dead dead or missing granddaughter. So I think I'm really loving it, man. Sometimes when there's a secret like that, or you know that something's going to drop, it can be a little frustrating and you're like, okay, like that show that you watched with Tom Holland, remember?
You said it
would have been better off if they had just revealed the secret in the beginning and just told a straight drama. In this case, they're doing a very
good... I never said that.
Oh, maybe it was...
I said the crowded room or crowded house. Or
yeah, whatever. Yeah.
No, I said the fact that they did drop it midway through made it... At first, you're thinking, yeah, with that show, they kind of... Dropping the main... what secret or whatever that blows you away in the halfway through the show allowed the second half of the show to be amazing.
Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting.
But a little different, but I thought we were just going to have a mystery the whole time, but because what they drop isn't like necessarily groundbreaking, but they did that because there was so much more to this type of story
they could only
that you
tell
needed
it.
To know
right.
in you order needed, to tell yeah. it.
So you can empathize with the character and their journey.
And see what he's going through right. and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so that's what I'm saying about this show so far. I don't know how long they're going to string us along with who this guy is or who Ruby is. And we even hear Ruby talking on the phone after he leaves because he says someone's following me and it's not. It's not Bernie. She makes a phone call and says he thinks someone's following him, right? Like, is she mm-hmm. working with him or against him or what's... She keeps on telling him you need to take a break. Don't take this case, right? Like, that's the real reason she didn't want him to take the case. Going behind her back was one thing, and, you know, but it was that she wanted him to take a break. I also found it interesting, and I'm just riffing here, please, I'll stop after this, that each time he's with Ruby, it's a flashback. It's a flashback to him talking to James Cromwell, Jonathan Siegel, both times.
Right.
I just thought that was really weird. Like when I rewatched, and I also like to rewatch and fast forward to kind of get the flow of the scenes, I was like, this is really weird. Like every time he sees her, he's flashing to a conversation with him. What's that connection? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And she does seem to know everything. Now, whether or not she's just connected, I mean, if you want to go the vampire vibe,
you know,
what's that?
I think, is she real or is she?
Again, every show I watch ever since Fight Club, I think someone's not there. Yeah, but yeah, like, because at first, like in the first episode, she seemed okay. She's hiding in plain sight, but she's kind of a handler. You wouldn't think she was, based on her appearance and the way she acts. You would think, oh, she's just, you know, neighborhood person, whatever.
A friend, but then in episode two, yeah, because it's at her house. Yeah. It's just very, right. It's like they're not meeting at some client, like building or in like on a bench somewhere. Right. It's like he's just coming over to hang with. I thought it was like an old friend.
Can I finish my thought? Yeah. Yeah. But then in episode two, she seems a little more, she changes a little bit. She's more monitoring him. She's more analyzing him. She's more, I don't know. I feel like she's holding back something. I got a different vibe from her. Not that I don't trust her, but something's different about her in the second episode, which I found interesting. My thing is, why did she say he was unavailable? Was it just because he was in Tokyo dealing with something? He needs a rest after Tokyo? Or is there something deeper? Is this case, this Siegel case, because he says it reminds me of Jen, and we find out in episode two, that's his sister, a case that went bad. And so, you know, is there something that she doesn't want him to find out? Or is this a case that could does John Sugar know who he is in certain aspects?
Is he being protected in a way?
And will this case, could it be one of those cases that opens up Pandora's box for him? You know, that's another thing. Is there a way they're controlling these John Sugar elites, these PIs? I mean, I'm not ready to go vampire yet, but there's definitely something special about him.
You're not ready to go full vampire yet.
I'm not ready to go full.
Okay. No full
eclipse
vampire
or new moon yet.
It's definitely an interesting dynamic that they have together. And I totally agree with you. And I had not, I mentioned that phone call she asked when she said, oh, he thinks he's being followed. But you're right. It's things seem to take a turn. The stuff in Tokyo was shot so well and so interesting. We also should mention it was in black and white, right?
Yeah.
Which frames it differently. And with all the flashes to old movies, makes you think, did that really happen? Was he really in Tokyo, or is he just getting out of the hospital or something, right? Like, is Jen his old girlfriend that died and they've reprogrammed him into, you know what I'm saying? It's like something, is it something like that?
Well, like they say, saying, he says it's his sister.
Right. But yeah, I know, but I mean, is that the rewrite of the story for him? Right.
Like, right. Right. Yeah.
So I, that's a great point you make, Keith, that it seems, you're right, that it seems now to me that it's like she's trying to protect him. Not that she's against him, but that whatever information he could figure out about himself or what's happening would hurt him. Because he does seem like such a, and that plays into him being like a super sweet guy, which something is, by the way, we're not that used to that. Like a lot of these shows we watch, the guy says he's nice, and then within the first couple minutes, he's not so nice. Right.
But well, even down to her nice. Cooking to making lunch for him and yeah. not wanting to talk about work.
Yeah.
And just be normal.
Good point.
Like that seemed very caring there
yep.
versus, you know, so yeah, I guess because with Murder at the End of the World, you and Ando had so many crazy things like the girl's a robot and all that. And
yeah.
one Mike was like, dude, I'm not ready to go there.
Okay.
Down That's this cool. sci-fi rabbit hole just yet. I'm going to take the other approach. Feel free to continue that because I love the way your mind works, but I'm going to stay a little simplistic until it happens, and then I will say, well, there you go. I should have saw the signs.
I like that. I think we need that. I think I need that. But I will say that, remember when they're at the bar, Melanie says that she does like sci-fi movies. So they are kind of, they're prepping us.
Yeah, they're just trying to get you to go there. But who knows? Who knows what they're prepping? But he did ask for a specific title. She wouldn't give him a specific title. So,
true.
Anyway, I want to ask you: so the handshakes, the double vision, like the stuff you're talking about? Mm-hmm. Do you think that's from the cut or pre-existing injury? Because he does inject himself. So is that just he just can't sleep? Or, you know, I hope Black Mary doesn't turn into a werewolf, but at first I'm like, oh, he has some condition. But then I realize he just doesn't want to get his arm treated. And so it seems to be affecting, but that the hallucinating of the blood dripping on the pictures and, you know, the bloody shirt and him going into it's a little,
I feel this is my theory, Solo. I'll make it quick. It's something.
Godzilla.
It's Gojira. It's a I feel like we're heading into the remixed past thing, where elements of that happened to him, and what he's remembering is elements of that mixed with whatever representation we saw of it in Japan. Right? What did we see? He bursts into a guy's apartment. The guy had hidden a little kid with a woman watching him in a hidden room. It was when you think about it, it was very strange, and it did seem kind of hallucinogenic or dreamlike. So I think the arm, the needle, whatever, I mean, it could be VR. It could be a whole host of things. But I will say one thing. I'm just as interested in where Olivia is and Melanie and Davey and Bernie and all the seagulls as I am in that. So that's a good thing for me, because sometimes in a show like this, you don't get that. But I'll leave my super weird theories, but I do think it's something like that, you know, like,
well, I got a little scared. I mean, I'm not gonna say scared, but kind of in that rabbit hole aspect of when he says, Olivia reminds me of Jen, don't take this case. I almost felt like, are we going down the Memento track?
Or he was in the remake of Total Recall, remember? And remember that happens in Total Recall? He remembers. It's not really his life.
Yeah, and I was thinking like Angel Heart, and I was thinking of the movie Shattered with Tom Berenger, an old school 80s movie. Like I was just thinking.
Oh, that's Angel Heart's a good. Yeah, I did get like maybe he's an angel or he's sent to help people, you know?
Well, I wasn't going that. No, I wasn't.
Oh, okay.
Not that Angel Heart's not about angels being sent from the Mickey Rourke movie, Lisa Bonet, he's tracking down someone.
Oh, okay.
That happens to be himself.
Oh.
Spoiler alert for Angel Heart. So I don't know what Angel Heart you were thinking.
Oh, I was thinking of that Robert De Niro movie where he's the devil. Remember?
Yeah, that is.
Oh,
that
okay.
is. But
okay.
He's not an angel.
Oh, I don't
know. Well, I guess it, maybe thematically. Okay, maybe thematically it could work. Okay. I thought you were thinking of Heaven Can't Wait.
No,
or something.
No.
Well,
okay, yeah, I meant, yeah, exactly.
No, but that, because Angel Heart is very the investigation, a mystery, what's going on. I mean, maybe, you know, it has some voodoo involved. And yes, Lewis Cipher and the devil. It does have those elements. Ooh. So I'm feeling like this show has these elements of those, you know, it's like Sam Spade meets Angel Heart, this show, you know,
yeah.
Maltese. But it's just like it has those elements. So there's a lot of branches out there or a lot of doors to be open that it could go either way. But it does have that where you're starting to think. And that's one thing I love about podcasting about a show like this is because, yeah, maybe we sound crazy the first couple episodes, but it's there. The possibility is there. And I will agree with that. I'd like to talk about some of these characters because, you know, him with the Olivia trying to, you know, get information and stuff. And then I'm thinking, it reminds me of Jen. I'm like, oh, he's not the one who killed Olivia and didn't realize it. Like, that's why I was thinking like the Angel Heart thing. But let's talk about some of these people that are involved in Olivia's life that he goes and questions. And
Whoa. Hold on a second, Solo. Hold on. You just said something that I had thought of, but had not really explored. And you just went right past it. I like this idea that that he's solving his own mystery, right?
Yeah. That's what I meant to say about the Angel Heart thing that I didn't come across.
Yeah,
that
like clear. Memento. It's exactly like
Memento. Memento. Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted
that's
to
what
mention
I was alluding
that,
to.
That he put the guy in the trunk. That he, right? Like he,
right.
Whatever, we have this whole weird story that's two different parts. The Siegels, right? It's like, it's actually two separate families. It's the Siegels on one hand and Hollywood and that Chinatown type stuff. And then we have on the other hand, the Vasquez family. Melanie,
yes,
right? Carmen Vasquez and her sister, who we meet at the end of season two. Okay, Teresa. So that's really interesting to me. I'll let you continue.
Yeah. No, that's, I'm glad you clarified because that's what I was getting at and I didn't quite blurt it out there. But yeah, that interests me. All right. So Rachel Kay, former actress, died in a car wreck, Olivia's mom, birth mom, nude Polaroids found. There was a suitcase of all her like clippings, an old headshot with a resume on the back, which I loved.
Bernie's ex-wife.
Now I'm beginning to like, was the car accident something?
Or,
you know,
it goes back.
You know, there's something more.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back. And so that interests me because you get a lot of, what is the, I can't remember the, was it Alan Spector who killed the actress, but got off on the,
Phil Spector,
you know, the small Phil Spector. Yeah. Yes. Phil Spector. Sorry, Alan.
Yeah.
I got the Phil Spector vibes from that.
Yeah. They're pulling from a lot. And then we find out about Davey and he has accusations against him. It seems like these men treat women very badly. And Bernie may have had something to do with his famous wife's death. And then we see these nude Polaroids who he says he didn't take those. Could that have been the cause of her car accident? You know, why Olivia had them hidden away? Was she using them as some sort of insurance or blackmail, you know?
Yeah, or was she having an affair with the grandfather, James Cromwell there? I mean,
it is Chinatown, Jake.
Yeah, it's funny. You go off on vampires and aliens, and then of course I go that direction, and we're all screwed up. But Nate Cordry, who plays David Siegel, plays Davey, met him a bunch of times, used to come into my bar. Freaking super sweet guy, very cool. So it was great to see him showing up. Of course, you've seen him on Mom, and he was on Mindhunter. He's been on a ton of great stuff. He's such a good actor. Okay, this is the thing, though, Axel, with Davey. So, and Bernie, played by the great Dennis Boukassaris, who I love from Law and Order days. God,
that guy is the best.
Of course, I was about to say Cousin Sal. Better Call Saul.
Yep.
I mean, but he's just one of those actors I always just loved. You know, he's in one of the Bourne movies. I mean, he's around everywhere since I remember him from the 80s and 90s. But I just, when he was in this cat, I'm like, oh, this is great. And he's playing a little bit of an asshole. But like,
he usually does. He does that well.
Yeah. No, he does. But I guess I found him very, I just, he's like my likable, my, one of my favorite likable character assholes actors.
Yeah.
I just love Dennis Boukassaris. So I'm so super stoked he's in this. But so, you know, he knows, of course, his father hired John Sugar to find Olivia. Of course, both Melanie and Bernie are like, oh, she's on a bender, no big deal. But they're now spying on John Sugar. And they want to find out about him and all that. I'm thinking, if you had nothing to do with your daughter's disappearance, why would you be so concerned with everything about John Sugar? Now, it could be that he's someone new into the mix. They don't trust him, and they don't want some guy sniffing around taking his father's money and blah, blah, blah. But I just feel there's a little more to it. Like if someone's there to find your daughter, wouldn't you support it?
Yeah, that's the interesting.
Or there could be other secrets he doesn't want him to find out about.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing is, anytime I try to go down the road of why the family is involved, the intersection is Melanie, because she is Bernie's ex-wife, right? Amy Ryan, we're talking about.
Right.
And her demeanor changes very rapidly, not only after meeting John Sugar, but after speaking to Bernie as well, that she admits to, right? Like, I spoke to Bernie. Yep. She has a come to Jesus moment. But we also have seen her in a picture with the dead girl, Carmen Vasquez, right?
Right.
And she also said to John, while they were standing there looking at the beautiful Los Angeles skyline, maybe it wasn't her in the car. Maybe her friend took the car. Why would she even say that, right? Like, she's kind of spilling, like, is that really what happened? Because the story, as we understand it now, is that her car was repeatedly going to the home of this woman.
Of Melanie, right. Was it Melanie or of Vasquez?
No.
Oh, yeah, no.
Carmen Vasquez is who was killed. Teresa is her sister.
Right.
So Melanie, it was the John says that it's Olivia's car, right? Because he's tracked it.
Right.
He uses, again, his phone seems to have abilities and does not look like an iPhone.
That I will definitely give you. That phone could freaking start a world war or prevent that. I mean,
he's taking fingerprints on it. He's putting it up against a car and it's doing shit. He's opening doors. He's doing all this types of shit with his phone. So I don't know. It doesn't look
Tokyo, like Tokyo, man. They have better technology.
That is true.
No, but I don't. But it is does seem something we've never seen.
So to break down the story as I understand it, is that John tracks her car. Her car has ended up repeatedly in front of Carmen's house. Carmen was raped and killed by the gentleman who was in the trunk, whose name is Carl, right? That's Clifford Carter, not Carl. Clifford Carter. Clifford Carter, because that's the picture that he's showing to all the people when we get that.
Carl is the drug addict yes, with the dog,
yeah,
right?
You have in the note.
Okay,
right?
I have that buddy. Wrong in the notes.
So
I'm not a good note taker.
So Carmen, Olivia, for some reason, keeps on going to the house of where Carmen was raped and killed by Clifford, who is now in her trunk.
Yes.
Okay.
And who is now gone after telling, yes. after Sugar tells not only Ruby, but also Jonathan.
Yes. James Siegel. Cromwell. Yep. Grandpa.
James Cromwell.
Tells Grandpa. Grandpa cleans it up, but leaves a hair.
We think, because Ruby, I don't know. Ruby knows this stuff too.
Yes, Ruby does know everything too.
And go to the cops. You didn't go to the cops yet?
That's
why.
I don't know if Ruby is real. It might be that John is just a regular guy who's messed up mentally and he's invented Ruby. But I don't know. Anyway.
Well, because tea party or bridge night or whatever? I didn't see anyone at that house. That was a little weird.
Yeah, that was. I thought that was a dry delivery of a joke.
Could be, too. Yeah. Like, don't bother me on a Tuesday. Yeah.
It took.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Olivia's car is in front of Carmen's house. Carmen is raped and killed by Clifford. Clifford's body is in Olivia's car. Olivia is missing. We see a picture of Melanie, Olivia's stepmother, not her mother, Olivia's stepmother, with Carmen. Okay. But at the same time, all of the Siegel men, right? And I'm going to include, what's his name? Kenny in here.
Kenny. Oh, Kenny.
They seem to be plotting against finding her and against Sugar himself. And now it seems like Melanie has also kind of turned. So that's how I understand. I just wanted to lay it out. That's how I understand.
No, thank you for doing that because our great friend Eric Lang shows up, plays Stallings.
That's the thing.
And he kind of, that's where we get a lot of this, but then also that Clifford was going to move on to Melanie. Because the picture of the phone, who is this, this bitch or whatever it says on there. So we know that Melanie's could have been in deep trouble that night as well. So there's some connection there.
Exactly.
And I, at first, when I saw Teresa, I'm like, that's not the room service girl from the hotel, is it? Like, at first, I'm like, I thought that was her, but I don't think it is. Right. It's not.
You know what, Solo? I don't know. I honestly do not know.
I thought it was, and they were trying to get info on Sugar because he has a direct link to bringing in his food. I was thinking, but I'm probably wrong. And again, I apologize for our listeners.
I'm going to check that
into the show.
We'll check it after. Go to our Facebook page, and we'll confirm that, or we'll talk about
it. Sure, Grandpa James will let me know if I'm right or wrong, which I'm probably wrong.
I felt like that wasn't the same person. But
I don't think so. I think it would have been too neatly connected.
Yeah, I felt like the room service woman was a little older, but maybe that's just me if I remembered it. But
well, he did ask about her kids. So
he
that's
did.
Why
he did. You're right.
But
that was, I was seeing that as an example of him being nice again, but they could have been fooling
us. Right. No, you're probably
right.
You're probably right.
Everyone's connected. So, I mean, they're laying out a really cool detective, hard-boiled novel here where people are tangentially connected until the end where we see how they're actually connected. Because at this point, after two episodes, that's where my brain turns is, okay, the question for me now is, do the Siegels know who Clifford was, Clifford Carter, and Do they also know who what's his name is? Our friend from Lost. I don't know what his
Eric
name
Lang.
Is.
Stallings.
Do they know Stallings? What's their connection to him, and we're going to meet more people.
Right.
We can see from the cast list, there's a bunch of people.
Yeah, we got some different
one in particular that will be recognizable to many Breaking Bad fans.
And one in particular, if you're a big Ozark or Rabbit Hole fan.
Yes. Yep.
Which I love that freaking actor.
So we'll get more about it. But I liked this. Like, they laid out what I described and what we were fumbling through is is kind of confused. They did a good job, I felt, of using this hour and a half. We should mention that looks like the episodes are like the first one was 49 minutes, then the second one was 36. I think the next one is like 32 or something.
Oh, interesting.
So and then I heard that too. I heard one brief review of a critic, because the critics have seen all the episodes. So be careful looking on the internet, folks. Don't go looking for spoilers. You'll find them. Oh, everything okay?
I was just going into my three body problem, which was if I had all the episodes to binge, would I want, I love binging, don't get me wrong, but I also do like waiting for certain shows. And I guess this would be a really good binge, but I'm okay with the week to week. To be honest, because it's just, I find it fascinating and let it percolate and, you know, but no, I'm fine. Axel, thanks for asking.
There's a couple things I had to mention. May I mention a couple things?
Oh, please do, Axel.
All right. Who's Hannah? Because when Ruby hands him is the magazines, the film magazines, that later Davey says a bunch of movies no one's ever heard of. And it made me think, is he saying that because they're good films, unlike the shit he and his dad make? Or is it because Sugar is an alien from another dimension? But that's okay. But she hands him letters from Hannah, and she says, oh, she still writes letters. And then she's
Isn't
like,
that his
yes,
mom?
Old fashioned. I don't know.
I thought they said it was his mom. Could I be wrong?
Maybe I missed that. I'll rewatch it and check it again, or maybe we'll see the next episode.
I thought it was his mother.
That's interesting.
But I could be totally wrong.
We'll see. I thought that was interesting though. And also I wanted to say, Thomas Kinsey, who is Grandpa Siegel's man, who he meets at the door, who is also a great actor. Wait, let me get his name. He's Miguel he's Sandoval.
Great. He's great.
I don't trust him. I think maybe if there's any connection or any information is being filtered out from Grandpa, I think it's him that's doing it. I just want to go on, because just the way he acted, the way they made like reference to him a couple times, I was like, okay, he's going to end up like screwing over Grandpa.
Hastings. We got to keep an eye on Hastings.
Yep, keep an eye. I want to shout out when Sugar goes to see a movie, and it's John Cassavetes' Minnie and Moskowitz, which is a great movie. And Jenna Rollins, who is one of my favorite all-time actresses. Yeah. She says, you know, I think movies are a conspiracy. They set you up to believe in everything and ideals and strength and good guys. And of course, love. I never met Clark Gable. I never met Humphrey Bogart. I never met any of them. You know who I mean? They don't exist, Florence. That's the truth. And that was kind of like the monologue that Olivia's mom did. And then we see Olivia do it too. It's interesting.
Okay. So was that an audition tape or a piece of a movie, and then Olivia just redid it?
Yeah,
for her TikTok,
it was creepy.
Or
yeah, she was
it
like,
it was weird. I'm like, why is she doing that scene?
Well, I think the story was, if I got this right, just from glimpsing at the newspaper clippings, that was a screen test that her mom did for a movie that she didn't get to star in because she died in the car accident, and it was going to be her big break.
Oh, geez. Okay.
That's why they were like, like all the newspaper, it said like a tragedy, you know, like she never got to be the star or something, like
right.
taken too soon kind of thing, right? Or maybe.
Yeah. You know? Okay. That actually, I like that a lot.
So that became famous. And so I think she was redoing it on her TikTok, which is hard for old guys like you and I to understand. I think that's incredibly morbid, strange, weird.
You're right.
But kids today would probably do that and be like, yeah, it's cool. No yeah. madcap sus or whatever the fuck they
She's
say.
She's almost like a Sharon Tate kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, not as.
Kind of,
I mean?
Yeah,
on
that's
the cusp
a good one.
Of becoming a huge star, but taken way too early. I mean, of course, Sharon Tate murders are much more, you know, but just kind of like that vibe.
Yeah. The it girl that never was.
Yeah. Right. You know, James Dean, maybe more James Dean, but James Dean had some big breaks before he died. But
I have a question for you, Solo.
Yeah.
Who is Davy's mom? Because we know that Davy's the only kid that Rachel had was Olivia, who's the missing woman. Davy is her half-brother. Is Melanie Davy's mom?
No, I think it's... Could it... Well,
it's a third.
Okay, so Bernie's third wife is that the Asian lady that's in the room with.
Yeah, them. But I don't think that's Davy's mom.
No. That's what I'm saying. So I don't think. I mean, Davy has any Asian ethnicity in him.
No, I don't think so.
That's interesting. Yeah. So who? Yeah, who would be his mom?
You know, they're brothers too, Nate and Rob Corddry. I never made that connection.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I never made that connection. Huh. Crazy. Yeah, I don't. That could be what brings Melanie over. Is I think Davy may be her son, and Davy obviously has that whole scene where Bernie is in the golf cart. Surrounded by women who are talking about how to cover up a guy who has assaulted women. And it's Davy, right? And 9 women leveling accusations against him.
Right.
They say not victims. Don't call them victims. So maybe they somehow use Davy to threaten Melanie. And that's what turns her straight to stop drinking and kind of shut up about everything.
Well, what's interesting, too, with Melanie, she was 23 years sober, and then she started binging 2 weeks ago, and that's when Olivia went missing.
Yep.
So I'm wondering if that's a connection there, you know, why she started drinking. You know, there's something.
And she was friends with, we still don't know. Do we know exactly when Carmen died? Because was she going to her house before or I think he may have said after she died. But I wasn't sure.
I assumed it was in the 2 week thing as well, but I could be mistaken.
So could it have been Melanie killed Clifford and put him in the trunk? And
I mean, it's possible.
And she told Olivia to skedaddle, like get the fuck out of town. So Olivia's like basically on the run and
because Sugar does mention like, are you protecting her? Are you hiding?
Yeah.
Her?
Yeah.
You know where she is. And she kind of, you know, of course she puts that guard up, you know, like you said, when they were talking the next day, it was totally different than opening up about sci-fi movies drinking. So,
this is good, man. We got moving on this Solo. I like it. This is good.
Yeah, no, I like it. And I like we're thinking about all different things and possibilities. And I like that because because I'm thinking like, you know, I was worried at one point. I'm like, oh, I hope this is not all in his head and he's in some Tokyo hospital or something. Or I'm like, please don't let it all be in his head. And this is not real.
There's it could be something in the head, maybe, you know, I don't know the injury. We'll see how it plays out. We'll see. I'm willing to, you know, so far because the actual mystery and detective stuff is so good. It's shot so well. score, acting, everything, I'm willing to go for the ride. So whatever kind of, you know, ta-da surprise they pull on us, whatever rabbit isn't pulled out of the hat or the magic J.J. Abrahamson magic box, whatever they open that up, I'm willing to go with it. I hope, though, that the story we're learning about the detective stuff is integrated into that in a cool way. I did want to mention one more thing you had in your notes, and I thought the same thing. Right before he leaves Tokyo, he goes to the bar and he does his thing where he really smells and tastes the liquor, like he really loves it. And he looks over and there's an Asian man that looks at him, and they kind of, then he looks over at him, and then I think he gets a little bit of a smile, and then they cut. And you had, is John Sugar gay? Like, is he, did he go and fool around with that? That's the one thing I thought too. Did he like go and fool around with that dude? But then later he mentions to Ruby, I saw one of our own out. We gotta pull up the good old fashioned
transcript
for it. But he says something like, I saw someone on his own. He needs to come in. Can we help him or provide cover in Tokyo? And that's the guy I think he was talking about.
That's what I was thinking. Like, yeah. I forgot about that. The first time around, I'm like, oh, was that just a little hint that that's his sexual preference? Because it was a little odd, you know?
Yeah.
But then I was like, wait a minute, did that guy know who he is? And then when he mentions to Ruby about bringing a guy in from Tokyo, then I'm like, wait a minute, maybe that's him.
That's the guy.
So, that's another little subtlety that.
Yeah. What's that about? Who knows?
And I mean, have you noticed real quick, just my last thought, is, I mean, we talked about how this isn't shot traditionally, like, there's even like when he picks up the cat and he's like, the way the camera shakes a little bit and stuff, there's some interesting, we get black and white again when he's driving. Is it just his point of view where he sees everything black and white? I mean, there's different, why these choices cinematically?
Yeah.
And that's what's really interests me, because I can't put my finger on it, because with the pinhole thing where it's close up of his, you know, the cell phone when he gets the message to get hired for the Seagulls, and then when he's, you know, lying in bed, and then it happens again, and it happens a couple other times.
Yeah. And it mimics, it's not the cameras, just
someone watching him.
It mimics the cameras that he puts up in and around his villa. So I think, you're right. I try to figure out the same thing, Solo, how it relates the picture to the story, what they're telling us.
Yeah, and I don't quite, you know, like you said, like Tokyo, why was that in black and white? Was that because that case was just straight up black and white? You see what you see. And then now, you know, back to, is it a reality thing? Is it, you know, there's so much here that I just... You know, which is good. I mean, I don't want to figure this thing out in two episodes, but I can't put my finger on why this is shot a certain way and stuff, which I like. I like to be, you know, not have everything, but I'm so curious, and which is going to make me watch even more.
Definitely. I agree with you. It layers, you have the mystery of the missing girl. You have the mystery of the mysterious detective. You have the mystery of the way it's shot and edited too, right? Like that, that is a mystery to as a viewer as well. I keep on trying to relate that too. And yeah, it does. Now, a lot of what our director has done before, he's used a lot of handheld, and that's, it does jump to handheld and weird perspectives. And I'm happy to report that it doesn't overdo it too much. So we do get back to like more traditional stuff. It kind of fades into a nice traditional way of shooting, but it's still really inventive and fun, and it keeps you guessing and keeps you interested. I guess we're going to have to figure it out.
It, yeah, it. You remember that show Patty Jenkins did with Chris Pine on TNT? He was like kind of an invest. Chris Pine plays kind of an invest, a reporter, a low beat reporter, following a mystery. I can't remember what the name was, and it was good, but it wasn't like great. I was a little disappointed.
I am the night,
but yeah, I think, does that sound about right?
That is.
I think so.
Yeah, I think that's it. I am the night TV set. Yep. Yeah. Oh, wait. Yeah. Did I? Oh, wait. No, I did watch this. Yeah, this was really good. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah, it was. But it was. It was a little. I remember not loving it as much as I did. But then I can't remember now. Maybe I did like it. I don't know. But that's another one in this genre, where I feel like Sugar is going to go to the place that I wanted I Am the Night to go to. That didn't quite there for me.
Okay.
But to be honest, I can't even remember half of it.
it was just before COVID hit, and then everything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You know, man. So yeah.
Good excuse.
I know.
No, but yeah, but again, and then we just got done watching Monsieur Spade, the series on AMC. So
you
it's
never
like,
finished that.
Oh, you never did. Good series, except the finale. I didn't like the finale. Mm. There's a lot of the finale that just confused the hell out of me, and I thought, eh. But all in all, I really enjoyed the series. I love Clive Owen, so.
Yeah, he's great.
Tom Fontana.
Oh yeah, Tom. Oh, Oz, man. Remember when you were rewatching Oz?
Yeah, well, I was watching the last season. Because I never watched season 6, and I was like, oh my God, to get back into this world, I forgot how crazy it is.
I know. Holy cow. That's one that I've often thought of. Hey, let me rewatch that. And then I was like, yeah, I don't think I could ever watch this show again.
No, it's a fantastic straight through watch, but I it's not a rewatchable unless you're just in that prison mood.
No.
It's a lot of great actors in that, though.
So. Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, man.
So I think that's all I got for our first Sugar Pod.
Yeah.
Oh, just real quick. Mm-hmm. I love how Ruby connects with Sugar's movie mind, gets the gun that Glenn Ford used in The Big Heat and has it restored. So it's in working. And he just, cause Sugar doesn't want to carry a gun, but because it's Glenn Ford's gun in The Big Heat, he's like, he compromises. I just it makes me want to go watch all these old movies. I'm like, it's really what it's going to do. I want to spend another $150 on all Blu-rays of these old movies now.
Yeah. I think they're doing a great job. I'm not usually a fan of like cutting in old movies and stuff. Like sometimes I think it can be distracting, but it's so quick and they're very on point with what's happening in the scene. It doesn't pull you out of it. I feel like it really works with it.
I felt Axel episode 2 did it a little too much at one point.
Okay.
There was a montage that had Bogey a bunch of times, which is fine. Like I was okay. I just was like, I just felt it was a good.
Pace when he was interviewing the people, when he was like doing his kid reporter routine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get your papers here.
Yeah. Get your papers. Yeah. Light edition. I felt it was a little, it knocked me off my keister a little bit. I just thought it was a little much, but I'm okay with it too, because the way they're doing it, I just hope it's not like half the episode. I just hope they don't do more than they did in episode 2. It would take me out a little bit, but I do like it because there's a purpose for it and they established that early. So it's good. Yeah. I just felt like, oh no, I thought they were going to go really far with it. They didn't go as far as where I would have been like, it's too much. But I did feel that there was more in the second episode. So, but we'll see where it goes. But I do like that. It brings me back. Remember Dream On HBO?
Oh, my God. Yes. Definitely. Like, one last thing I wanted to mention is the dog, his new dog, Wiley, from Unfortunately Dead Carl. It's not good to be a Carl on TV. You'd be like, Carl. Yeah.
Which they spoil in the trailer because the dog's in his car.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, So my wife's like, oh, I bet you the dog goes, I'm like, yeah, you saw the trailer. That's why. Don't, you can't get credit for that prediction. I saw it too.
I liked when he went to Ruby's with the dog and he tried to put the dog on her, but she had a cat. And it was kind of an interesting, I don't know, it made for a very interesting little scene too, because like you were saying, where their relationship seems to be changing a little, you know what I mean? Like to, in this mm-hmm. episode, in the later episode. So as it goes on, let's see what happens. But it was weird. The cat, like just before he left, the cat looked back into the house, like very purposefully, was like, rawr. And then the dog was like, ooh. And got, so I don't know. I just thought the whole thing was very that surreal.
By Axel Foley.
I liked it. I like this. I like this surreal. I think this show was actually kind of funny too. I think it had a good little twist of humor in the clips too, and everything that was happening. I don't know. Just a great vibe. I'm glad we picked it solo. Thank you for hosting. This was a great episode.
Yeah, no, it was. And I love Colin Farrell and just his smile, or his when Ruby catches him and sort of like not a lie, but like, oh, you're trying to manipulate me. Mm-hmm. His he's just like, I fell in love with Colin Farrell again, is what it comes down to. My wife's not here, so I can say that. But, you know, man crush. Yeah. I think I've moved on from Tom Brady to Colin Farrell. Oh, Colin Farrell's my new
much better choice.
Hey, hey, take it easy. Take
but
it
you
easy.
Love but the no, Irish. I've you always, love the Irish solo.
Yeah, just like, I do. I do love the Irish. Yeah. I do love the Irish. Nothing wrong with that. Except when you're cutting off fingers because your best friend doesn't want to be friends with you anymore. That kind of...
or the, you know, the this took a turn.
That movie. Yeah, it did take a turn.
All right. Let's wrap it up, baby.
All righty, mate. That was bloody good. All right. I'm losing it, so let's end the pod. Guys, thanks for listening. Axel, thank you for your amazing insight. Remember, you go to dvrpodcast.com for all our other pods and info. You can send us an email, dvrpodcast@gmail.com, if you have any theories, thoughts, and of course, our Facebook page, Daily DVR TV and Film. That's what it is, Axel, right? Or did I screw that up?
No, you got it, baby.
Facebook. Yep. Oh, yeah, I got it. All right. And don't forget my film, guys, The Star City Murders, coming out April 16th. You can check it out. You can pre-order on Apple TV and Amazon. You can also get the DVD or Blu-ray as well. And also, we're doing a companion podcast for the movie, which is basically concept from script to now distribution. We have old episodes we recorded from our Kickstarter campaign and throughout production. We're releasing now, and we're going to be recording some new ones with our composer, cast, producers. It's a lot of fun. So check out the Star City Murders companion pod. And if you're a listener of the Star City Murders companion pod and you leave us a 5-star review or even like a little comment, you'll be entered in a contest we'll be having this summer where you can get your own Blu-ray or DVD sent to you. And some nice contests we're going to be having on the pod. So look forward to that this summer. And we're going to be giving away props from the movie, all kinds of cool stuff. So check out the Star City Murders. Axel, any last words?
None at all. You are the man. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Join the Facebook. Talk with us. We want to hear your thoughts and theories. This was a lot of fun. We picked a good show. You're the best, Solo. Peace out.
You're the best, fellow. Ah, sugar. Oh, honey.